Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
The conscious mind has so many things to worry about. For instance, SPF 50, SPF 60. What are the differences in the numbers? Well, I'm sure there's a Wikipedia article somewhere. Look it up. In the meanwhile, I'm talking to you. Your unconscious mind. The station's on. Commercials are over. It's time. You're tuned in to your favorite late night talk show for the Shamelessly Fringe. Welcome to Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hello, everybody. Greg Bornstein here, your cultural hypnotist and consciousness disruptor. Chief Looper, welcome to Open Loops. For those of you that don't know what an open loop is, I'm going to get to that in a second. You see, my goal on this show is to challenge your existing belief systems with radically unique ideas that I share, that my guests share, as a way of stimulating your unconscious mind, so you're ultimately forced to step into the highest version of yourself. What kind of ideas? Well, in the fields of curiosity, magic, hypnosis, spirituality, ancient mysteries, secrets, philosophy, conspiracy, and of course, the biggest questions of them all, who and what we really are. Because an open loop is just that. It's an unconscious provocation. It's that thing I did at the beginning where I asked, what is an open loop, and didn't finish the thought. Yes, we all love open loops. Some might wonder, why is Greg being a little quiet today? Well, I'm recording this with people sleeping. Shh, don't tell anybody. But what does that mean? Where am I? Doesn't that provoke your unconscious? Doesn't that make you wonder? The show's all about the wonderment. It's all about that lifelong curiosity. And it's also got some controversial views. You know? Like the views of my guest today. Stephen Myers. He has a whole organization dedicated to his theory that the Great Pyramid was a water pump. Did not know where the conversation was going. Did not know I was in for an hour of him straight up roasting the entire field of Egyptology. And it was one of the most entertaining interviews I've ever done. I love Stephen Myers. Check out his work at thepump.org. If you enjoy Open Loops, please make sure to share this with your friends, family, and if you can follow it on Apple Podcasts and rate the show and leave a few words, a couple of words as a review really helps me out and continues to get this show out there. Without further ado, I'm so excited to share this with you. Stephen Myers on the Great Pyramid is a water pump. Today on Open Loops, Stephen Myers. He, of course, is an author, researcher, documentarian, and he is the founder of the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. We're going to get all into understanding how and why the Great Pyramid was built. Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Greg. I appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, I have to know, how did you get so, I mean, some people are very into ancient mysteries. Some people talk about the pyramid. Some people also bridge off of that and talk about Stonehenge and other artifacts in the world. How did you focus so specifically on the Great Pyramid and specifically the pump?
Well, I have a very technical background. My degree is in electronics, and I collect antique gasoline engines, and I also am a ham radio operator, so I enjoy technology, and I also enjoy history. When I studied World War II in high school, instead of the generals or the politics, I was more interested in the battleships and the airplanes and the tanks and all of that. So if a person likes history and technology, they'll probably end up sometime looking at the Great Pyramid. It's a 45-story skyscraper that was built in ancient times and has a lot of high technology associated with it. So that's how I got started.
Wow. Now, that's interesting because, and this always intrigues me, Stephen, the bridge between the scientific and the, and I suppose the material reality. And then once you start getting into the spiritual, were you always spiritually inclined? Were you always into the unexplained? Or yeah, how did you bridge that gap?
Well, basically, my interest about 25 years ago was, wow, that's a neat old building over there. Wonder how they made it. And why would they go to such an effort to do such a thing? You know, that's a lot of work to do. How did they do it and why? And I, did what everybody did 25 years ago. You go to the library and you thumb through the card catalog and figure out a book, and you walk over to the shelf and pick it up. So I looked at all those books written by Egyptologists who are self-professed experts on this ancient stuff. And they told stories about the big ramp, and they told stories about workers using hand tools to make very extremely precise stone cutting and dragging 70-ton stones up a ramp. So I read those books. You know, I'm an avid reader, but I found out something about Egyptology that a lot of people don't know. And that is, they come up with a hypothesis or a story, but they stop there. They don't engage in the scientific method to create demonstrations to lend credence to their ideas. So I find that very fascinating, that Egyptology has never moved a weight the size of the largest stones of the Great Pyramid 1 inch. They've never done it. Haven't moved a weight that big, 1 inch. But they say working people and peasants could do it all day long. And they've never made a casing stone, which is the outside stones. Most have been removed. Mm-hmm. That are cut with extreme precision, weigh about 16 tons.
Right.
The entire science of Egyptology has never made one of those, ever. So I find that interesting. So, and that has some very profound implications, like cows jumping over the moon. If you found somebody that was a cow jump over the moonologist, the first thing you'd want to do is say, well, hey, show me a cow jumping over the moon.
Right.
But Egyptology gets away with, for some reason, they get away with it. They get a free pass and they come up with their stories, but there's no demonstration to validate it. So then I read the alternative books You know, that the Great Pyramid was a beacon so aliens can find their way back home, or that it was some sort of a death ray or a weapon, or that it was just a tomb for a dead guy. And but then I finally found this book, privately published, called Pharaoh's Pump, written by Edward Kunkel. It had a very limited distribution, and I read that book, and it was phenomenal. It talked about how the Great Pyramid was built and why. So it was a fascinating book, and then I ultimately started a nonprofit foundation to build on his research, and in fact, named the foundation after his book. So,
Wait a minute. So this is interesting. This is very interesting. We're going to have to fill in some of the gaps there, because that is, after going through all this research and discovering that you couldn't quite find anything that made you go, yeah, these people don't know what they're talking about. And I think you're absolutely right in the sense that these pyramids are still a big mystery. That's what the Eric Von Danikins of the world are saying, these people that think that ancient aliens created them, the way the stone is precise. I mean, no one's ever been able to do, but why aren't people able to do it now? All that stuff. But what was it about the pump theory that, because to me, the pump doesn't sound too fringe. It doesn't sound too ancient alien. I mean, what was it about that that particularly resonated with you and made you go, yes, this person does know what they're talking about?
What I liked about Edward Kunkel's research in his book was that it made sense, and much of what...
Oh, you still there, Stephen?
Water locks.
Sorry, take it back a
barges
second.
Barges were used to build the Great Pyramid, and water... Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You were saying, so what you liked about Edward Kunkel's book was?
That it made sense. It made sense. Mm-hmm. And it seemed very reasonable and logical and doable. He didn't talk about like a magic wand or people worshiping crystals or just throwing his hands up and saying aliens did it. But he... made a pretty good explanation for how the stones were moved and set in place to build this 45-story skyscraper. So it resonated with me, his book.
Yeah. Why isn't this theory? It sounds as if it would be a great hypothesis to present to even mainstream academic classrooms. I mean, why is it so hidden? Why is this not out there?
Well, a lot of people don't know about it because Edward Kunkel, he privately published his book. It had a small distribution. But a lot of books have mentioned Edward Kunkel's book, 5-5-2000, written by Richard Noon. The Giza Power Plant mentions Edward Kunkel, a whole host of other books. People watch Ancient Aliens or they say, well, let's find out what the Egyptologists say. They're experts. But more people are becoming familiar with this direction of research all the time. I've written a couple of books and produced a couple of documentaries based on the research of our foundation to further Edward Kunkel's work. And the few people that still read books have, it helps get the word out.
Yeah. Do you think this theory supports the idea that there was a ancient civilization that was smarter than ours, this Atlantean thing that you hear often in the community of spirituality and the New Age, that kind of thing?
Well, there's a lot of, whatever New Age is, but I think that the builders of the Great Pyramid, whoever they were geniuses, and they were very capable people. and the Great Pyramid, just as a structure, validates how capable they really are. If the Great Pyramid would have been commissioned to be built by Egyptologists, it would have never been built because they can't even make a single casing stone. So the builders were certainly geniuses, to say the least, and built this huge structure to benefit their civilization and to also help, you know, their own children, if you will. The Great Pyramid wasn't built to tell us something, to tell us they knew pi or whatever. The Great Pyramid had a very huge return on investment.
Yeah. I really like that you are slamming Egyptologists. I find it. Yeah, you mentioned a few times you do not like these Egyptologists, or at least the belief system of the Egyptologists. What happens with you and Egyptologists? Do you ever get in discussions with these people?
Actually, there's a wall of silence. You know, they're not going to acknowledge me. Certainly, Edward Kunkel faced the same thing. Even Dr. Robert Schock has faced, you know, tremendous opposition. He was the fellow that geologist, renowned geologist, who said the age of the Sphinx is much older than what Egyptologists say because of its geologic water erosion. So Egyptology is a science that's in crisis. It has virtually stagnated. It hasn't really advanced in the last 100 years at all. I've actually, on my YouTube channel, have a video titled, "Is Egyptology a Pseudoscience?" And certainly you can tell what my conclusion is. So that's a wonderful video that goes into a lot of issues with Egyptology in much greater detail than we can go into here. So I hope people watch that on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, I want to know more about what Egyptologists are saying that you just find so obscene. Is there anything right off the bat that, what's a common thing that Egyptologists have been peddling that you go, nope, here's why this is absolutely untrue?
Well, we can just scratch the surface by saying that it's a science that doesn't engage in the scientific method. They also use the idea that authority validates truth, if you will, but that's not exactly true. They say that unanimity of expert opinion is what validates what they say. In other words, they all say the same thing, so that validates what they all say, but that's a type of circular reasoning. Yeah. They don't engage in the scientific method at all. And never will. I think that there's several reasons for that. One is because their explanations of the direct physical evidence is incorrect. You can't produce large scale, extremely precise stone cutting using hand tools. Mm-hmm. Christopher Dunn has talked about that a lot in the last 20 years, and he is more diplomatic than I am about Egyptology, but again, just a host of things that are wrong about Egyptology that, again, my video goes into in great detail. So, you know, sciences and ideas and whatever, they come and they go. They used to, not long ago, teach phrenology in college, you know, the study of the bumps on your heads and how they relate to character traits. Yeah. In college, books written, professors would teach that. The only thing is that idea cannot withstand the rigors of the scientific method, and it ultimately went away, into the ash heap of rejected ideas. Right. So Egyptology is in that crisis. They talk about these things that ordinary people could do, but in modern times, that method that they say was done all day long, it literally cannot be done. So they're in a crisis, and everything else they say is up to scholarly debate. The age of the pyramids, the sequence of construction, and their purpose, and a whole host of other things. So the only thing that I agree with on Egyptologists is maybe their measurements of the Great Pyramid. You know, it's something that mundane, but any interpretation is certainly up to scholarly debate that they've come up with.
Yeah. Stephen, I have to know right now, what do you go into your theory of how the pyramids were built in your book, or any of your books? I know you have a couple.
My research focuses on two things: how the Great Pyramid was assembled, how the stones, you know, were brought together and stacked on top of each other, and also why they did such a thing. You know, I don't talk about who built it too much, or even when it was built, or where it was built. That's the only thing about the Great Pyramid that's not under scholarly debate, is where it was built. But how it was assembled, and why. There's other people that research the Great Pyramid that don't talk about how it was assembled, like the Orion correlation theory. They don't even address how it was assembled for a number of reasons. But yeah, I do. I do. Took my first book, The Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, discuss how it was assembled. And my second book, The Great Pyramid Prosperity Machine, talks about why it was built.
What are the implications of this? This is big stuff, because people are always talking about that it's difficult. No one could rebuild the pyramids. And if you're sitting there telling me people pick up your books, which, you know, hey, learn about them at thepump.org. You have two books that I see available on Amazon Kindle, if you've got that. Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, and of course, The Great Pyramid Prosperity Machine. You know, if people are looking at these books, if the world got a hold of these, what would happen? Would people start building pyramids? I mean, what are the big implications that you think of your work?
Well, I think that the Great Pyramid was built to help the people who built it, that it had a huge return on investment, and that it was built to be infrastructure for the civilization that built it. And that infrastructure worked as a machine. And what that machine was, that it pumped water and provided prosperity for the civilization that built it. So I think it's an ancient high technology that certainly would have very positive implications for our modern but very troubled world.
Huh. Well, yeah, go more into that, because you know what? This gets to interesting stuff, and I'm curious if we go down this rabbit hole a little bit about what your thoughts are on pyramid power and the way the alignments are there. And then, you know, you get to the point and it's high vibration. I mean, I've even seen you comment on photos of the vents in the pyramid and pointing towards stars. I think when a lot of people think of the pyramids, they think these are high energy frequency places, and they use all these vague words like portal and all that stuff. Is that what you mean? Do you buy into that? Or are you saying it's set up for something else for all of civilization?
Well, I think it was built certainly by the civilization that created it to benefit those people in a tangible way, not spiritually, not symbolically, not to tell anybody something, and that it served the purpose of, again, being a water pump, which provided prosperity there in the middle of the desert. And that's what it was for. It didn't just like all hydroelectric dams have passages that point to stars, but that doesn't mean that was some intended correlation. So the Great Pyramid had a functional purpose, just like the Hoover Dam, if you will, had a functional purpose, or the highway system, that type of thing. It was infrastructure to help people in a tangible way. No hocus pocus or religious stuff was involved.
So you think when people go to the Great Pyramid and they start talking about this high energy. You hear sonic frequency. Oh, the sound. Yes, it's speaking to my soul. You think that's all a load of rubbish?
I think it's an incorrect assessment of the direct physical evidence that we all have. Just like less than 100 years ago, people would go to the Great Pyramid and they would say, oh, look at all the correlations between the Great Pyramid and the Bible. And that's called pyramidology. That the measurements of the Great Pyramid predicted the birthplace of Jesus. And it also confirms Bible prophecy and all of that. But I think that that research was conducted using some very inferior research methods, and it's not valid. That isn't very popular anymore for a host of reasons, but you can look it up and see charts on the internet. The few people that still adhere to that explanation are, you know, religious zealots and that type of thing. But no, I think that when you used to be able to tour Hoover Dam before 9/11, you could go all through it. You'd be a tour. You could see the big shafts turning and everything. And the tour guide said it was like an industrial cathedral, you know, because it was so magnificent, so precise and everything. And that's in a way what the Great Pyramid is. It is an industrial cathedral. It's not a place to contemplate your navel or to mummify a corpse or any of that. It's something that actually helped people. A big return on investment, you know, instead of no return on investment.
You know, and this is okay. This is really interesting that your stuff is so based in, really a theory that isn't too fringe, really, as they say in this business. I mean, it's not too, you're not talking about ancient aliens here. You're not talking about portals. And I know in your book, I mean, you mentioned stargates at some point, but I don't think that is the thrust of your research. Is really about technology and infrastructure as we talk about in society today. And yet, if you look at where you're talking about this message, you're on shows like, I mean, shows I love, Conspiracy Unlimited, My Alien Life podcast. You're on a bunch of paranormal shows. A lot of these, but you're on this show, Open Loops. Do you feel like ever being on these alternative shows makes people not take your message as seriously as they should?
Well, I'm presenting information, you know, and even if you're in, let's say, a gas station and you're in the bathroom stall and you see truth written on the wall, the truth isn't determined by where you get it from. So I'll be on all these shows. I like to be on paranormal shows because they have a lot of people that think outside the box, that have like an open mind or that are looking at new ideas. So no, I'm thrilled to be on shows like this.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad. Yeah. I just wonder, I mean, you know, oftentimes it is hard to present narratives like this, and especially when there's a mainstream, certainly in the archaeology movement. I mean, when you hear these people talk about ancient alien or ancient astronaut theory and presenting even just physical evidence that doesn't fit, out of place artifacts, you know, they get shunned by the entire academic community. Have you ever tried to present this to a mainstream academic before?
Well, I essentially have written a couple of books, and whoever wants to read those books, I consider to be engaging in peer review. And my understanding is that academics have the ability to check a book out of the library. So the academic community rejected penicillin at first. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? So that's kind of funny. The academic community rejected plate tectonics originally. It was first called continental drift. But they rejected it for a whole generation until they could come up with their own story. The academic community, they embraced the Piltdown skull. They embraced it. That was the missing link right then and there. And they embraced it for about a generation. All those people that wrote their doctoral thesis on it, they had, you know, their careers and finally died off, always thinking the Piltdown skull was valid. It wasn't until the next generation of anthropologists came along and they said, well, no, there's visible file marks on the Piltdown skull, so we don't accept it as being valid. But neither group of anthropologists changed their mind. So basically what the best thing that'll advance my research and acceptance of it is a dying off of Egyptologists.
Oh my gosh, these Egyptologists listening to, I don't know if there's going to be any Egyptologists listening to this, but I do find it amusing that take them down. I'm all about it. I love challenging the mainstream view. Do you you talk about the water pumps. Oh yeah, this is so cool. You have several graphics on your website, thepump.org, that show this hexagram where you have combustion, air, pressure, electrolysis, vacuum, water, and the pyramid's in there, and it's like a star sort of thing. That is a really advanced understanding of physics. It really is, to be able to create something like that in this great pyramid. Do you have any idea in your research how and why they were able to come up with something like this?
Well, it's hard to say who came up with it, but certainly somebody did. It's like alternating current is really complex with transformers and transmission lines and all of the frequency and everything, and it's complex. But the guy that figured it all out, figured it out in one afternoon. So, and even if we didn't know who it was, which it was Nikola Tesla, the system would still work. So who figured it out and all of that is certainly beyond the scope of my research, but they did. And my second book, The Great Pyramid Prosperity Machine, talks in great deal about the path water moved through the Great Pyramid, how it moved, and what made it go, and all of that type of thing. It's at least as complex as a V8 automotive engine. So there's a lot to it.
What is some of the most compelling evidence for you that it was a water pump?
Well, there's certainly a whole host of examples of evidence that indicates a profound link between water and the Great Pyramid. Sir Flanders Petrie found Nile earth in the passages of the Great Pyramid, which is sediment, if you will. Herodotus described the Great Pyramid as being like an island surrounded by water. And I don't know how literally it was. It's hard to tell, of course. But the Great Pyramid up until the 18th century had an enclosure wall around it. And we think that impounded water for a number of purposes. So that would be like a big island in a small lake, if you will. And there are salts, deposits on some areas inside the Great Pyramid. We think that had is associated with water, deposits, if you will. Much of that has been cleaned off to cosmeticize the interior of the Great Pyramid. The casing stones were cemented together, joined together using a bonding agent that was stronger than the stone itself. So those joints were watertight, as were other joints inside the Great Pyramid. So there's a lot of evidence that lends credence to some sort of a profound link between water and the Great Pyramid.
So there's not actually, I know you've been there before, but when you showcase in your documentary footage of water moving through the passage and chambers, you've never seen with your eyes the exact passages and chambers that point to, oh yeah, no, this is a water structure. Is this more conjecture?
It's, well, whatever term you want to use. Yes, I've been in all the chambers of the Great Pyramid.
Okay.
And looked it all over, that type of thing. We were going to lead a tour in February, but COVID caused that tour to be canceled. And that'll have to be rescheduled. Sold out tour too. It was quite a disappointment. There's a web page on my site at the www.thepump.org showing what we were going to do in Egypt, all the sites. But anyway, is it conjecture? Is it an explanation of how the water worked? You know, it's certainly whatever word you want to use. Is the big ramp conjecture, or, you know, or people dragging stones conjecture, you know, that type of thing? Is a cow jumping over the moon conjecture?
I don't know. I mean, people, it's such a mystery. I don't understand. I mean, what is, people think they were tombs. What about the other pyramids? This is the Great Pyramid. What were the other pyramids for?
There are other pyramids, certainly close to the Great Pyramid, physically, on the Giza Plateau, as well as other pyramids around the globe. And they all have different degrees of quality of workmanship. Some are made of different materials. Some are made of rubble, if you will, especially in Central and South America. Some are made of sun-dried mud brick in the Valley of the Nile. Some are quite primitive, if you will, big, little. The sides are of different angles, that type of thing. So different pyramids probably had different purposes, different designs, certainly different interiors. Some pyramids in South America have a platform on top. Great Pyramid does not. So, but the other pyramids, it's certainly up to scholarly debate what they're for and who built them. Even the pyramids on the Giza Plateau could have been built, certainly separated by time, even 10,000 years, you know, by a different civilization. So it's hard to say what other pyramids are for.
Yeah, I wonder why specifically this one was a water pump and the others were just around.
Well, there's speculation. I mean, there's certainly different explanations. Some of the other pyramids could have been built like in the same vein as a cargo cult, if you will. During World War II, soldiers would visit isolated islands with people living on the islands, and the soldiers brought all this cargo, if you will, and there became a cult of worshiping both the people and the cargo. So when the soldiers all left, those people on those islands developed a religion, and they made airplanes out of palm branches. They made radios out of crates with little fake knobs and stuff, trying to entice the gods to come back and bring more cargo, to bring prosperity, if you will. And some of the other pyramids could have been some sort of a cult thing other than the Great Pyramid. But certainly the Great Pyramid was built, you know, as a functioning machine, as far as I'm concerned, and that provided that prosperity. That's why they went to the effort to build it. Just like we built, let's say, the Grand Coulee Dam in Washington State on the Columbia River. It was the biggest structure in the world when it was built, and it makes electricity and pumps water, a self-powered water pump. So irrigates like 1.5 million acres in perpetuity. Hmm. So that's that big, most expensive structure ever built, when built, pumped water. In fact, the largest water pump in the world that's operating is in the Valley of the Nile. It's the Mubarak pumping station. You can word search that. Huge water pump, biggest in the world, $500 million to build. And so in modern times, people in the Valley of the Nile needed, built, and used water pumps. And I think in ancient times, for a very similar reason, they had this great pyramid as a water pump.
Interesting that they were able to, and I know it's outside the scope of your research to figure out why they did this and who they're from and all that stuff. And that's, hey, look, I get it. You can't figure out everything here. I mean, already just dealing with this technology. Well, go ahead.
If I can say this, the why, yes, I figured it out, but not the who.
That's not fair.
The when.
That's,
but the why, I certainly have. You know, yeah. You want me to tell you why?
Yeah, I do.
The people that built it wanted their kids to eat every day. So they built a great pyramid and it provided prosperity. Instead of toil, the people that built it wanted to have leisure. And so they built the great pyramid. Instead of poverty, they wanted prosperity. That's why they built it. That's why they built the Aswan Dam. You know, that's why they built the Fukushima power plant, to provide that energy and prosperity and infrastructure. That's why they built the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
And not to point to something.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, when you're talking about this troubled world we're in right now and everything that your charitable organization is doing, what's the trouble in our world right now that you see a pyramid resolving? That's a water pump.
Oh, that's simple. I'm glad you asked me that. Oh, we got a lot of trouble in this world.
There definitely is a lot of trouble in the world. Yes.
A lot of trouble. There is a lot of pollution down in the Gulf Coast area where they drill for oil and then have these huge oil spills that are unbelievable in terms of their environmental impact. And there is a trouble again over Fukushima, where they had in Japan, where they had the nuclear power plant go kaplooey. A lot of trouble there. There's also trouble with the transfer of wealth from the first world to the Middle East. Because we have to buy energy to drive to work, if you will. You know, when you go to the gas station, it's like fill your gas tank. It's a third of a day's pay, you know, depending. So you can drive to work. That's trouble. There's a lot of things that are trouble. So high energy costs and that type of thing. So that's what hydroelectric dams did. You know, they alleviated a lot of those things, although they have environmental impact. So there's a lot of trouble in this world. But if we had an alternative way to, let's say, generate electricity, that would help. That could be decentralized. Not that everyone would have a pyramid, but they could use polypropylene containers, PVC pipe, some custom fabrication. And that's what we're trying to do, is redevelop this ancient but high technology to help our modern but troubled world. So yeah, it's exciting here.
Wait, have you done any? Have you managed to do this at all?
We've made some components and sub-assemblies. And, you know, that for all of the things that we're doing in terms of the foundation, that's the most resource intensive, if you will. You know, it costs to do some custom fabrication. We recently got a metal lathe for our foundation that was donated. But we also are looking for a plasma cutter and a large air compressor. They require a lot of compressed air to do some of our fabrication. So if anyone is interested in, you know, helping us in that regard, they certainly can. And of course, a 3D printer. We're looking for one of those too. So we're doing some experimentation when we can. We have some donated materials. We have a guy that's a welder that's helping us, who's much more valuable than an Egyptologist ever could be, because a welder can actually do something. And so that's true. That's what we're trying to do, is redevelop this ancient technology.
Yeah. Why in the world isn't this? I mean, okay, here's what I'm wondering. Why is there a man, now I'm losing the question. I think it's just remarkable that you're building this pyramid. Or you're not really building a pyramid, but you are figuring it out. Do you think that you could get shut down at all? Do you think that the people that might shut down a Nikola Tesla, you know, there's a lot of theories about this, that his papers were raided when he died, that he was developing energy technology that would have gone against people who had interest in economic means and that kind of thing. Is this an alternative that might get you in trouble if it catches on?
Well, that's hard to say. If I ever get killed, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
But Tesla was being funded, and the funder said, okay, we got this energy system. Where are we going to put the meter to charge people? And he says, there won't be any meter. And after that, his funding dried up. So, you know, there's no money in it. You know, there's no money in a clean environment, you know. Pollution is definitive proof that somebody made money. You know, there's no money in healthy people. There's no money in people producing their own energy and not paying an electric bill every month. So, you know, it's hard to get funders, if you will. But I don't know about any conspiracy theory, that type of thing. So we'll see.
yeah. I'm just wondering if you've tried to bring these ideas out and anybody, it doesn't sound like there's too many people contesting it except an Egyptologist that wants to protect their ego.
Well, there is that, you know, certainly, you know, the difference between an Egyptologist and a tomb robber.
Yeah. What's that?
An Egyptologist has a college education and a tomb robber don't.
Do you have more Egyptology jokes?
I do.
Wait, give me another one. This is good.
Most Egyptologists, the largest stone they've ever moved is the one in their kidney.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Have you considered going on the road with this act?
I should. Yeah, I got a whole shtick I'm working on. So, But not to dwell on Egyptology, but it is a Egyptology is the biggest hindrance to understanding ancient Egypt. So their genesis was started by tomb robbers who stole things out of dead people's graves and sold them to museums. And Egyptology is does that now in a way. It's more genteel now. They pay for a dig, but the artifacts are still in museums for people to pay money to go look at. So it's Egyptology is the of all sciences now, it's the richest science in the world. But they don't engage in the scientific method and do demonstrations.
What do you have against ley lines?
Oh yeah, I put a few posts there. Well, there's a concept of the ley lines. Certainly, your audience probably knows about them. You know, and ancient sites, you know, are built on the nodes often of ley lines and everything else. But I do have a Facebook account and made a few memes that ley lines. Never really helped anyone in a tangible way. So and then there's been some, some people don't like that because, you know, there's a lot of books about ley lines and everything, but they haven't really helped anyone in a tangible way. So do you know how ley lines have helped anybody?
Not directly. It's never tangible.
Yeah, I mean, it can be hocus pocus or You know, something very ambiguous, but I know a lot, you know, I can name like penicillin helped people in a tangible way. And a plow helped people in a tangible way. So, you know, if you want to get helped, you know, in some kind of a tangible way, don't get involved in ley lines, if you will, you know.
So you
hydroelectric dams help people. Help, you know, hydroelectric dam, they spent a lot of money and they didn't just say, well, there's a line that goes here or there. No, they actually built a hydroelectric dam and it helps people. So, but a lot of people that are into ley lines don't want to talk about, you know, they have never helped anybody in any tangible way.
I love that. But
then they say, well, there's a worldwide grid or whatever. Yeah, what did the grid help? How did it help anybody? So, no, I'm not a ley line fan. You know what I like?
What?
You know what I like?
What?
I like prosperity.
Yo. You know, it takes
100-watt light bulb would take 10 people to power. One person could put out about 1/10 of a horsepower, if you will. So if you have your light bulb on, it takes like 10 people, you know, like say cranking something to keep it going. You know, a person can't work but more than 8 hours. So yeah, I like electricity. I like that. I like my refrigerator. You know, I like prosperity. I like lots of stuff like that.
Yeah,
I like
why
get my car instead of walking to the next town to get a meal. So
I don't
get on a ley line. You know, a ley line ain't gonna help in any way. Not going to help me get well or help me retire sooner or anything. So
wait, this is, you know what? I'm very interested. This pyramid stuff is great, but I'm really interested in your opinions on people in, well, I mean, you kind of crap on Egyptologists. You kind of crap on energy healers and ley line people. I mean, have you ever seen a psychic?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly beyond the scope of my research. When you say crap on people, I have crap on them with the truth. Did you know that?
And, well, it's a very truthful crap.
If the truth offends people, then they are falsehood lovers. And the truth is, ley lines never helped anybody. You know, I haven't got to where you talk about if they exist or not. That's a whole different question.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, you showcase these drawings of ley lines across the globe, and I'm thinking, yeah, but who made this map?
Somebody with a crayon. You know, I'll tell you what, a lot of research these days is done by crayons. Like they draw the big ramp and little people pulling up a 70-ton stone, which is the weight of a railroad locomotive.
Yeah.
Beyond the scale of to move in a production line manner without handling scars. So Egyptologists, you know, they'll move like a 1-ton stone, a foot and a half or so, that they've set in place with a forklift before the camera starts rolling. And then they say that's how 70-ton stones were moved. Well, I can pick up a full-size car, just grab it and pick it up. And I can demonstrate how I can do that, but I'll use a Hot Wheels car.
So can you go more into that?
There's an issue of scale, and my demonstration is flawed, but somehow Egyptologists can get away with it. Oh yeah, this is how they move 70-ton stones. I'll move a 1-ton stone to show you. Huh? You get my drift?
Yeah. No. I'm with you. I mean, what?
How do they get away with it? But so a time will come when people just won't, even when they're teaching it in college, people just won't believe it anymore. There was a time when they taught phrenology in college. Well, people didn't really believe it anymore. There was a time when they were talking about the Piltdown skull in college, but people would look at it and say, look at the file marks right on the skull.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll just go away. Egyptology will. It will be an example of how not to conduct a science. So that's what Egyptology is. So
you don't have any Egyptologists in your family. It's not like your father's an Egyptologist and you're rebelling against him, are you?
I'm not. No, my father was a pretty practical man. He was the most handiest guy I ever knew. I mean, he's one of them guys that could do everything.
Support this
welding, carpentry, and everything else. And that's how he interfaced with the real world. If let's say you needed something made, he wouldn't tell you a story and draw a picture on a paper with a crayon. He would actually do it in the real world. But you can contrast that to Egyptology. Say, well, how did they make a casing stone? Oh, well, here's a hammer and chisel. Boop, 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 boop. We're hammering and chiseling. But they have animations or just little stories or nothing. And they get away with it. I don't know.
So tell me this. What's more important right now for the world? Getting a water pump system modeled after the Great Pyramid builders that is going to help sustain our environment, create a more equal economy, and really help us all? Or deleting all the Egyptologists from this planet?
You're hilarious. I would say there's a third option, and that is above both of those in priority, which is for people to love truth. Love truth.
Wow.
Instead of saying, oh, I'm going to pick out an expert and believe whatever he tells me. Or, oh, this guy, his theory is written in a book. I won't read the book. You know, love truth. Bear the burden of the responsibility of conducting research on your own shoulders. You know, seek truth. And if those things happen, both of those options will occur that you mentioned. So I just wish people would do that. You know, there's so much stuff that's not true anymore. And I'm not talking about agenda, politics, or anything, but just, you know, just in terms of history. And we are in a revolution of ideas, and research is, you know, people that conduct research should be doing two things: embracing what is true, but eliminating and rejecting falsehoods. If your research doesn't do both of those, then the research methods are flawed. I know people that say, well, everybody's got a piece of the story. You know, everybody's got a piece of the puzzle. Well, what piece did phrenology fill in? You know, what piece did the Piltdown skull fill in? What about the Great Pyramid Bible correlations? Those are blatantly false.
They
just hokum. They didn't fill in anything. But if people's research methods, and I know people that do research for years, oh, well, I can't eliminate anything. Well, if you can't eliminate anything, you'll believe every falsehood that comes down the pike. So I do post some stuff on Facebook. Oh, you're putting down somebody else's research. No, I'm discussing the research methods, or I'm talking about, you know, some issues about their interpretation of the evidence. But all people want to do is just believe what they're told. And, you know, once that happens, the hardest thing in the world is to reject what you already believe is true and then accept a higher truth. You know, computers can copy over the information and no problem, but humans aren't made that way. So once they accept some sort of a truth, only the few can say, well, you know, that may not be true, but I'll go to this higher truth that makes more sense. That's why it takes a whole generation for the Piltdown skull to be rejected. You know, it's just so I hope people just love truth and find out about my research before they pass judgment. It is a hard sell, you know, with all the damage that's been done by Egyptologists. Oh, it was a big ramp. They didn't need all those water locks or anything. Really? You know, that's like saying, well, the cows, they got really strong legs. You don't need the space shuttle for them to jump over the moon. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Egyptology is a heck of a hindrance for understanding ancient Egypt. And it's a stagnated science, the only one that exists right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, wow. This is such, such a specific message. And I can't tell what people should walk away with from this. I think they definitely should check out the pump. The pump.
They should go to thepump.org. We have our video series free to watch on the, website. They can, you know, it's a series of short videos. If they can do that, if they can peel themselves away from watching another sports game or, you know, reality TV and actually go conduct research.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope people can. I try at sometimes, you know, the medium affects your message, if you will, like on Facebook, it's all often quite crass, but I do try to get people just so mad that they'll force themselves to think. And there's a lot of people out there I can't get that mad.
Who, wait a minute. What other things have you done to make people mad? This is great stuff.
Well, I just, you know, I talk about, you know, the Egyptology. Oh, well, that's, you can't do that. You know, it's settled science, people will say. Or the religious people don't like it when you say the Great Pyramid does not predict the birthplace of Jesus and other things. And even people that believe the Orion correlation theory, you know, I try to discuss research methods, and boy, that's like pulling teeth. I've got a few videos on my YouTube channel, you know, trying to discuss the research methods that they use. So, you
right.
know, but all truths aren't just accepted. It's hard fought, if you will. You know, you have to be a warrior to break through. The guy, Alexander Fleming, that developed penicillin, you know, it took him about 20 years to get the medical community to embrace penicillin. And it actually wasn't the medical community, it was the military that wanted some medications that they could use in the military. And then ultimately penicillin and sulfur drugs became more widely accepted by the medical community. So it's interesting. You know, it's a revolution of ideas that we're going through in a lot of fields. But, you know, revolutions are always a battle. On everything, like women. What should women be able to vote? Well, that was a battle, you know, that type of thing. You know, equal rights, you know, a whole host of things. But change requires, you know, warriors. And I'm just trying to get the word out on shows like yours, others, and the interest is very high. So it's been quite an experience. But
yeah, why do you think still, it is? Why do people really resonate with this message?
Oh, well, if you talk to Egyptologists, oh no, it was a tomb, you know, built by slaves or whoever.
Right.
But you talk to like car mechanics, or you talk to truck drivers or people that work in shipyards, people that actually do stuff in the real world, they say that the method, the production line method to assemble these 6 million tons of stones, it rings true to them. It makes sense. The word I hear almost every day from people is how compelling it is. And they watch the free video series and see the stones on barges moving. And stones on barges or payloads on barges is very effective. The 21st century system of choice to move our most heaviest objects like battleships and that type of thing go through the Panama Canal.
Right.
They just expanded the Panama Canal. with larger water locks. They didn't use, you know, the magic wand or worshiping crystals or humming or anything, but because they had to actually do something in the real world. So they built bigger water locks. When the Erie Canal was built here in the United States, over there in the eastern part of the United States, it was 4.5 feet deep. The barges carried a payload of 70 tons, the same weight as the largest stones of the Great Pyramid. And they would go through these water locks, and they were able to move the weight of the entire Great Pyramid higher than the Great Pyramid in about 2 years. So water locks are fast and powerful. They actually work in the real world and have been demonstrated over and over every day for the last 300 years.
So we should all get more excited about water locks.
You bet you. That's for darn sure. just that in the Suez Canal, that ship was stuck. And the last time I went to Walmart, there wasn't any shoes. There was a whole bunch of empty shelves and everything else because that ship was stuck in a canal. That particular canal doesn't have water locks, but the Panama Canal does. St. Lawrence Seaway up between the United States and Canada. Any of that stuff was the interruption of flow in there, that would be devastating. You know, if you go to Walmart, you get stuff that's went through canals.
So, okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. Wow. What is going to be the first step then? People should look at your work. They should get, how powerful could this be, Stephen? Why would investing in the pyramid water pump and having this be a charitable cause be important, maybe even more important than some of the modern climate change initiatives you see?
Well, we are a environmental organization, educational as well, but this type of technology doesn't pollute. It's non-polluting, environmentally friendly, that type of thing. But it's also an alternative. With cheaply pumped water, you can use that water that's been elevated to generate electricity. It would be very valuable in third world countries, certainly, where they can't afford infrastructure like hydroelectric dams to use this to generate electricity or to irrigate marginal farmland. And in the first world, it would be an alternative to generating electricity. You know, it would be in effect, like I say, not a big stone pyramid in the backyard, but either individuals or cottage industry type or co-ops, if you will, pump this water and generate electricity, and in effect, don't spend your money paying an electric bill every month, similar to having a windmill or that type of thing. So, but this would be more continuous than a windmill. So that's some of the advantages in the modern world. But in the ancient world, I'm sure they powered heavy machinery, certainly did irrigation. A yearly inundation is ineffective in Egypt to irrigate year-round in a hot desert. Mm-hmm. That's why they have the largest water pump in the world in Egypt. Where else would it be? That's the best place in the world for one. And other purposes. So there's there's a whole host of things that we're talking about here. But it's technology, it's helping people. The Great Pyramid actually helped people in the real world in a tangible way, not like ley lines didn't help anybody, or pointing to stars didn't really help anybody, or telling us they knew pi symbolically didn't help anybody. The Great Pyramid helped people.
Yeah, you know what? Before we go, can you tell me another Egyptology joke?
I think I've run out.
the entire profession.
Yeah, you know, instead of being an Egyptologist, seek truth.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? this is I appreciate how much you're putting this message out there. Stephen Myers of the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. And of course, thepump.org. Check out his books, Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid and the Great Pyramid Prosperity Machine, as well as your documentaries. I mean, you've got a lot out there. Do you have any more books in you?
Well, I've got the two books. We were going to do a tour to Egypt, which was canceled because of COVID. I've written certainly a number of magazine articles and have a YouTube channel. Hopefully I can write another book. It's been really busy, I'll be honest with you. And a lot going on here, conducting research, adding to our research library at our foundation. If someone wants to donate the book they've written about ley lines or whatever, anything they want.
And wait, so you'll take the book on ley lines, even though you...
Oh, yeah, we'll put it on the shelf. There's a bunch of us. We'll read it, reread all kinds of stuff. Yeah, there's you need to read two types of books, the books you agree with and the books you don't. So, but a lot of people say, well, I might not agree with what your book says. I don't really know what it says, so I won't read it. Okay, that's a research method, but it doesn't work very well in a lot of ways. So, the most revolutionary thing you can tell somebody now is read a book, you know, and it's, that's what where the revolution is about, if you will, and don't stay in your echo chamber, you know, on Facebook or whatever. Talk to people you don't agree with, engage in dialogue, you know, the Socratic method and all of that. But find out what my books are about, and interlibrary loan them. You know, you don't have to buy them. This isn't a, oh, he wants money, you know, all of that. Interlibrary loan them. So, and then go from there. Contact me through my website at thepump.org. And
I was going to say, look at this, Stephen. You are. I'm looking at this GizaPyramid.com with Dr. John DeSalvo.
Yes.
And I'm looking at all these books over here that he's written and some of the other people. I'm going, you are just, this is completely again. I mean, he's got a book called Power Crystals. So you can be.
He's a great guy.
You know what? I might actually even be Facebook friends with this guy. But I was going to say, do you completely disagree with everything Dr. John DeSalvo has written?
No, I don't. He's written another book. I don't have it right in front of me, but it mentions me. So I certainly don't disagree with that. But people, researchers are like doctors, and we all have the same direct physical evidence at the Great Pyramid. No one has any secret evidence or whatever in the real world. We all have the same direct physical evidence. We all interpret that with our opinion. Just like doctors have the direct physical evidence of your symptoms and they offer an opinion, okay? Well, different doctors have different opinions that they offer. And what I consider myself to be is an additional researcher with an additional opinion about the same direct physical evidence. You know, I'm not talking about Bible prophecy or any of that, or stars that used to, vents that used to point to stars, but they don't point to those stars anymore.
Right.
And just made up correlations or anything like that. I'm just talking about an explanation of how the Great Pyramid was assembled and the reason why they did it, which has a huge return on investment. The biggest return on investment of any purpose proposed for the Great Pyramid.
You have given me a lot to think about, which is all I can ask for a guest on this show. Yes, Stephen Myers, check him out, thepump.org. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
Oh, I was thrilled and honored, and I really appreciate it. I think we had a lot of fun. There's, you know, we just scratched the surface on everything, but that's why we live a whole life, is to learn more than just the superficial, and to delve deep into it, and just keep an open mind and find out what this is all about before you pass judgment.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you again, Stephen, for coming on. This has been great.
Thank you, Greg.
Stephen Myers. Yes, the academic Don Rickles. Very fun, very fun. I loved having him on. I'd like to thank Rodney McGillivray for the theme music, Zero Boy for the pre-theme music, and you. I have gratitude for you. Thank you for listening. We have more fun stuff coming up. Take care.